Aloha. Welcome to episode 10 and first episode of 2018 of Marooned, a Texas Tiki podcast. My guests this week are Tiki enthusiasts Jamie and Lisa Bloschke. Those of you who post on Tiki Central may know Jamie better as Prickly Pear, owner and builder of the home tiki bar, the Lagoon of Mystery. Jamie has chronicled his build of the Lagoon of Mystery in his post in the home tiki bar section of Tiki Central and his personal blog, Chicken Ranch Gibberish. In this episode, we chat about his and Lisa's adventure into the world of tiki, Lisa's photography, and Jamie's steps in building out his bar. He might also reveal a secret or two of his tiki build methods. Jamie and Lisa invited us out to their house to record this episode, and we are lucky enough to catch a beautiful afternoon in New Braunfels. So we were able to bring you this episode from inside. Or would that be outside? The Lagoon of Mystery. As always, if you'd like to drink along, fire up the Total Tiki app, shake up a Port au Prince, sit back, and enjoy episode number 10 of Marooned, a Texas Tiki podcast. Thank you guys for having us out here and inviting us to the Lagoon of Mystery. Sitting here with Jamie and Lisa.
Yes.
Out here in beautiful New Braunfels, enjoying this lovely day, drinking a... What was this again?
This is a Port au Prince.
All right.
It's an old Don the Beachcomber recipe.
Awesome.
It's rediscovered, as many of them were, by, you know, Beach Bum Barry.
Yep. The historian. Finding all these old recipes and... compiling them into the app. And so I saw you had a small little library up there. What are you reading? What are your recipes coming out of?
Well, the first one I got, I guess I should start back up a little bit and point out that I'm not a long-term tiki aficionado. Up until about 2 years ago, I had no idea that the tiki culture existed out of this isolated bubble in the 1950s. You know, it was something you see on TV and movies and get little references to on occasion. But, beyond, the odd Margaritaville reference, tiki bars were just, kind of this kitschy thing. And a little more than 3 years ago, we moved into this house, which is a story in and of to itself. But as you can see, the listeners can't, it's got a swimming pool that's kind of shaped like a lagoon, and it's surrounded by palm trees, and there's a 65-foot covered patio. And when we walked here, we were like, oh my gosh, wow, this is incredible. And we thought that the kids were going to be out here constantly, and it's like, well, do we really want a pool and have to deal with all this? And the reality of it is that the kids are like, yeah, okay, pool, whatever, and mom and dad are out here every day in the summer floating with hurricanes or Mai Tais or something like that, and just relaxing among the palm trees, and it's our entire escapism. She started bringing home little resin tikis from the big box stores and putting them around the place and, tikifying the place. And we were floating there one day, and I was looking at them and looking at her, and it's like, we need a tiki bar. And so I went online, looked up home bar plans, and found a design for this, which is really much more upscale, and I adapted it into the L-shaped bar and built it on casters and put the thatch on the front from the palm trees that I have to prune every year. And that was it. That was my tiki bar. And then somehow, sometime, somewhere, I was online looking for... I don't really even remember what I was searching for, but I came across some pictures of tiki bars. And it's like, what's this? And I clicked on it and took me to Tiki Central, the home bar build. Mm-hmm. And my mind was blown. And I was like, what is this? And I started looking through all the pages and all the threads, and I was just completely blown away. And I looked at my little bar and I said, oh, no, I'm... just a pretender here. I've got to up my game significantly, and it kind of became an obsession from then on.
Well, and I got to admit, that's how I first found out. I saw your post as Prickly Pear on Tiki Central, and I've been following your build for a while, and I've been really impressed. I like the walkthrough. I've read your blog, seen. I appreciate that you're doing the tutorial and talking about what you're doing, because so many of these bar builds, they're just showing pictures. Hey, look at what I just put up, not how did I do this, or showing how you're burning the bamboo and roasting it and doing what it is that you do. So, and then when I saw you're in New Braunfels, like, yeah, we gotta talk to this guy at some point.
Well, it was interesting, because I went through, once I decided I was going to do more, I decided I needed a back bar and I needed to have it a wet bar, and it's not a wet bar yet, but that's one of the next steps coming up. I want, how do I do this and how do other people do it? And so I went through probably every thread from modern, up to date, who's the latest posting, back through 2010, looking at all the various bar builds. The Breeze Way out there was just phenomenal, the way Bamboo Bin swept in and they did all that work and just threw it up. And then the new Rincon Room, oh my gosh, that is phenomenal with their water features and the bridges and the volcanoes. And there are so many just spectacular home bars out there that put many commercial bars to shame. What can I do? How can I use this and adapt this? Unfortunately, like you said, a lot of it was the end product.
Mm-hmm.
And so the few that I saw that were tutorial type and showed step by step how to do, I found those kind of the most useful for myself. And so I said, well, if I'm going to put all this effort into it, I'm going to go ahead and document it, kind of in case I ever have to do it again, so I can look back and figure out how I, figured this out. And so that's what I've tried to do, kind of a step-by-step each part of the way. And a lot of it's really boring. Okay, I was sanding this, and I was staining that, and then I was wiping the stain, and then I was sanding it again, then I was putting on polyurethane coat. That's just really boring, so I don't really take pictures of all that. But, a lot of the router work and then the Dremel work, and I'm really frustrated because a few years ago, my brother gave me a nice set of German wood carving tools, and I didn't have anything to do with them. I mean, I did some woodwork, but not really carving. And while I was working on my office, I packed them up in a box, and I put them away with some other stuff, and now I can't find them. And I've got some wood over here that I want to do some carving. I want to try and start making some tikis out of some sections of palm that I've, recovered from people who've taken them down, and I can't find them for anything, and it's just driving me nuts.
I can imagine. You're doing great work, and I'm excited to see what else you're going to do. It's coming together. Like I said, reading your initial posts, like you were saying, this is still something relatively new. So what was it that intrigued you or brought you into the tiki culture?
At the time, I don't think I really knew. Now I can look back, and it's the escapism. I mean, when I come home from work, a hard day at work, whether I'm having some frustrations or something, I get into the pool and relax, surrounded by the palm trees with some bossa nova or exotica or some hapajole playing, and it takes me away from here, and I'm really able to relax phenomenally.
From my perspective, we love everything retro and vintage. You saw my studio out mm-hmm. there. I'm a photographer, and I love pinup, and I love pinup photography. And I'm fascinated by everything, 1940s, 1950s, the fashions, the styles, and tiki goes hand in hand with that, because that's when it had its heyday. And so discovering these pinups where, there's a tiki theme to them, and that kind of incorporated with what he had in mind for our tiki area. And so it seemed like a natural kind of segue into the tiki bar project that we have going here. So,
and one thing that I've surprised me is that the actual working on it is somewhat therapeutic. I work in media relations. I do a lot of writing. I do a lot of problem solving, responding to requests. Hurry up now. Things that can be pretty stressful. And I found when I'm doing carving, when I'm designing, when I'm sanding and putting up the bamboo matting or measuring of this, that part of my brain turns off, and I use an entirely different set of mental muscles, so to speak, And so I can just tune out all the noise of the things of man, so to speak, and just focus on that. And I've found that to be very rewarding. It allows me my own escape. And last night I was working on a new sign for the lagoon, and I looked up from painting, and it was 11:30, and it's like, wow, I thought it was like 9. You know, it's like I just completely zoned out and was focused on that task at hand.
That's awesome. I also hear rum is really good for removing the daily stress.
Yes.
So that always helps, and it helps to have somewhere where you can go to escape. So the lagoon looks great. I like it a lot. You've done a lot of work. Like I said, I've only been following the post for maybe, I would say, I found it probably in October. And I was just really impressed in seeing it, following the blog since then. You're doing a lot of really good work.
He's really anal about
it. Gee, thanks, sweetheart.
He's always been this way. He gets things so perfect, and if it's not perfect, he will rip it all up and start all over again from scratch. And it's frustrating for me because sometimes I'm like, you spent plenty of time on it. No one's going to notice this tiny little flaw.
That portal was a nightmare. I had it all done, and ripped it apart.
But he notices that tiny little flaw, and he won't let it stand, and so he will go back and start all over again. And it's kind of frustrating, but in the end, it is much better.
But you know what? It's that one little flaw that nobody else may notice, but you're just going to be fixated on it until it's gone.
Absolutely. And you know, it goes back to the fact that Texas doesn't really have much of a tiki culture, and my armchair historian perspective puts this on the fact that most of Texas is fairly subtropical temperate. We don't have severe winters. This winter has been kind of an exception, although we have a spectacularly glorious sunny day here today.
I know. It's a perfect day to be out here doing this.
Wonderful. But, in the Midwest, California was the gateway to the Pacific, so that was a natural for tiki. But the other main tiki culture, apart from Florida, was in the Midwest. And what do they have in the Midwest? They have harsh winters. Well, they have the frost line in the ground, so their foundations have to be set below that frost line. Well, when you're going down, 10, 12 feet for your foundation, you're going to build a basement. And so they had all these basements there necessitated by the weather conditions. And in the 1940s and 50s and 60s, what are you going to do with this unfinished basement? Turn it into a tiki bar where they can retreat to in the middle of winter and enjoy some tropical relaxation and escapism. Well, most of Texas doesn't have this kind of weather, so the homes here, the buildings here, are either built on hard limestone or expanding and contracting clay, which neither one lends itself to ready basements. And so we didn't have that basement culture. We didn't have tiki culture. There's a few restaurants. There was the Lahala House in Corpus Christi that was destroyed by Hurricane Beulah. And then there was Steak Island in Austin, which became the Magic Time Machine. And then we had some transient Trader Vic's and Don the Beachcombers in Houston and Dallas. And that's it.
Yep.
So when I was building or conceiving Lagoon of Mystery, I knew that it was going to be different because it's not in a basement. It's not inside a house. It's not the spare bedroom. It's a covered patio that's 65 feet long plus the pool area and this wooden deck. And so all of my design choices have been, how can I keep this clean? How am I going to keep the mud daubers and the spiders?
We've already found that just coming out here to clean it up, we last used it probably like September or October, and well, not used it, but had people over September or October. And even in that short little time span of a few months, just the dust and mud and bug parts that get caked onto things, we have to think about that constantly. And so a lot of the things, like I'll find something in an antique store, this will be great. And he's like, yeah, but the swallows are going to build a nest in that. Yeah, so we have to think about that instead of just...
Every spring we have a running battle with cliff swallows because they want to come in here and build up underneath. And it drives us nuts. It's like, we have all these plastic owls we put out to scare them away. And they'll swirl around and be angry. But and
the mud daubers that want to build things.
Mud daubers.
So it's a constant battle against that being outside.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's why I knew I couldn't put the Lahala matting on the ceiling or bamboo cross hatching or netting or anything up there. The ceiling would get caked up and filthy very quickly. So that's how I kind of hit upon, okay, I will paint it blue. And I wish I could remember his build. His brother's a director for did some of the Ice Age movies. Anyway, on Tiki Central, and he's done a lot of special effects and set design for Hollywood. And so he did this one bas-relief wall map of the Hawaiian Islands, and he used a type of paint, and he added this type of paint glitter sparkles to it that it had a really shimmering effect. And I said, that's great. And so turns out that the company who made it, I think it's Valspar, discontinued those paint crystals, and so I had to hunt all over the place to get enough to have the effect. And so I added all the paint crystals for that, and I painted the ceiling blue, and then I've done a darker blue silhouette of a bunch of different sea creatures.
And a mermaid.
I was going
to say, and a bikini top.
Yeah, that bikini top was my son's idea. We have mermaid back there. We have a sawfish, octopus, sea turtle, hammerhead shark, a couple of dolphins.
And what makes it so special is that the pool water has that ripple effect reflecting onto the blue ceiling.
That's what's caught my attention right there, right by the speaker. I'm like, this plays perfectly to the lagoon of mystery, the
exactly.
ceiling.
And then at
the
night
reflection.
When we don't have that reflection, we do have lights that come on that will create that reflection that we get now with a natural pool reflection.
I've been experimenting with different projectors, and I found some that have a fairly impressive effect. You can control the brightness and control the speed of the ripples going on. And so the patio has six columns that support the roof along the edge of it. My plan for next year, these are kind of white stucco columns. I am going to do wood carvings and clad them in these carved wooden posts. And on those posts, I'm going to mount these projectors. So at night, I'll flip a switch and we'll have blue ripple effects going the entire length.
That's awesome.
Of the Lagoon of Mystery, the ceiling. And so it'll have the effect like you are underwater. With the sound of the waterfall in the background from the pool, it's a really neat effect, and I'm hoping it turns out as good as I have it pictured in my mind.
I'm looking forward to it. Now, the lampshades that you have, did you do those yourself as well?
Yes, we have. You can see those three fans down there.
Those are the old. That's what we came with.
Yeah. That's what it came with, and when the ceiling was off-white, yes, it looked okay.
Yeah, once we painted it, we were like, well, those ceiling fans got to go.
They were awful.
So, but they aren't cheap, so it's like more, you know, get one this month, one next month, one in a couple months. And so that's what we're kind of doing.
Yeah, she surprised me with these two tropical fans. They have leaf-shaped blades, and they're very tropical looking for our anniversary. But it just kind of had an oval glass lamp underneath it. And I said, you know, that's not tiki. But the way it was designed, it has a proprietary kind of screw-in type thing, so I couldn't just replace it with a float lamp.
Yeah.
So I said, well, what can I do? Well, I'll build a shade. And so I got and burned some bamboo sections. I think those were each like 16 inches long or 10 inches long, I'm not sure. And I attached them to crochet hoops that are made of bamboo. One is like 12 inches and the next one's like 8 inches.
Oh, that's
and
a good
so
idea.
So it's kind of a tapering cylinder, and then I bought some just cotton print tapa reproduction online and painted it with amber shellac. That was a trick I picked up from Tiki Skip, who does some fantastic light work up in Columbus, Ohio. I learned so much from him, how to wrap and tie and all these other things, and so I came up with some pretty convincing lampshades to go over it. Also found out that the lighting has a lot to do with it. Before, it had some just kind of daylight bulbs in there, and that was just really kind of harsh, but I found some those LED Edison bulbs that put out like an amber glow, and that's kind of a rich honey light that comes out. And so now I turn them on at night, and it's this kind of warm, welcoming glow, kind of orange and gold coming out of there.
That's what I was saying when you got here. You need to see how it looks at night, because he's got lights underneath the bar over here that run right underneath it that have a nice warm glow to them too. The lights that you see up there that are covered with bamboo, they shine perfectly into the top of those shelves that have the tiki mugs in them, so they kind of illuminate all those tiki mugs. So it's really a really pretty effect that happens at night, you know, that you don't get when the sun is shining on it like right now.
Yeah. Everything here has kind of been designed out of necessity. When I started collecting tiki mugs, everyone has all these shelves that they display their tiki mugs on. Well, if I do that here, and I used to do that with the bar, it's got some shelves on the bar itself, and I would put the tiki mugs out. A day or two, it's filled with leaves and dirt and everything. You have to go and do this major washing to clean everything up before you can take a drink. I said, this isn't going to work. So I designed and built these two floating cabinets on the wall with sliding plexiglass. And they have little tiki carved
handles. And the handles, you don't notice them unless you get up close to them, but the little handles are actually hand-carved by him. And so that's, each handle itself is hours and hours of his work just to carve those little handles that he put on there that most people might not even notice unless they started really studying it.
It's those little details that really tie it all together. But, yeah, I mean, that's awesome. We've got a lamp. A while back, I bought a pineapple lamp. It's a gold pineapple, but I just haven't found a shade to go with it, so I may have to... I've been wanting to, like, just... Even just buying an Aloha shirt that's got a cool print on it. Cut out the design on it. I've been wanting to make my own lampshade, so I may have to take that idea. That's a great idea, the crochet hoop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's...
And they're like 99 cents at any of these, you know, craft stores.
Yeah.
They're super cheap. And that's been... kind of one of the driving motivations here is try and do everything on a budget.
Yeah.
I mean, because even when you're on a budget, it's going to be expensive. I mean, if you're going to buy the, it's cheap ponderosa pine planks that I did the carving for that middle piece and the baseboards, you know, that still adds up after a while. You're paying, you know, like $6-7 for an 8-foot section, and you got to have like a dozen of them. Yeah. So, I mean, you want to not cut corners, but spend your money wisely.
Yeah.
I mean, if I had, you know, $10,000, I'd call Bamboo Ben up and say, hey, go nuts.
Yeah.
You know, and he would go nuts because that's what he does, and he does spectacular work. But at the same time, you know, this has been bits and pieces, and it's evolved as I've gone along because doing one thing has kind of inspired me on more. At first, I was just going to have like three little silhouettes up there. And as I got it going, I said, I got to do more. And now I've got a bunch of smaller ones. It got too cold to do any painting, but you can see a little outline of a crab that I did up there. So I'm going to do little accent pieces and silhouettes hither and yon just to add to the mystery, I suppose.
Yeah, and like I said, we have this whole section here. It's going to go all the way down. So you just see like a half of it here. Imagine that over there. You know, all these plans for... Like, even here in the concrete, see where it looks kind of like a little beach, you know, the curve of the concrete? We're going to pull in, like, a fake sand flooring on the concrete.
Nice.
And make it, like, a sandy, like almost like it's a beach. You can see the curve in it there. So that's one of our ideas that we have in mind, but we don't want to go in debt doing this. So we have to do it a little bit.
No, you gotta make the most of your money. And
right.
Yeah, I mean, when you're doing the work yourself, I mean, that it looks really good. I'm really impressed by all the carvings that you've done. You're just doing that with a router?
I'm doing it with a router. Now, with the more detailed ones, the bottom, the baseboard is a simple triangular alternating section. That was all with a router. The middle piece that separates the bamboo tambour panels, which are a vertical tortoise shell with the bamboo weave, which is more traditional. Those I sketched out, and then for the detail work, I used like a Dremel. And once I got all the outlines cut, then I would go in with a router and do more a hand router. I have a large full-blown router, but that's the detail work on his is too much for
it's
that.
It's more intricate than.
And every time I get to that point, I start kicking myself because it's like, oh my God, why did you do so much detail on the sides of mug cases? There are hibiscus. Yeah. Yes, hibiscus flowers. Thank you very much. I had a brain fart right there. You know, and I thought, wow, this is going to be really cool when I was designing it and everything. And when I'm cutting it, I'm like, you idiot. You moron. It took me like a week to get all those carved out. And it's like, never, ever do this again.
And until the next time you do it.
Then you look, and I've got not only hibiscus, but I got plumeria, and I've got fish, and I've got idols, and all this other stuff. on those even smaller and even more.
And Hidden Mickey is coming too. Yeah.
Coming soon.
Coming soon. It's not hidden if you tell everyone about
it. I was going to say.
They're not going to know where it is. So when they come here, they're going to find, where's the Mickey?
Yeah, it's a constant evolution of creative ideas. For the end right here where the window is, that's all still white siding. And over there, I want to have an 8-foot section of faux lava.
Awesome.
They have it broken up, kind of got that mid-century modern look to it. And I want to build some shelves in there and have some... I'm kind of a big passion flower enthusiast. I have... you can't tell now because we've had some hard freezes and they're all dead. I've got like 4 different types, species of passion flower that grow over the fence to the dog kennel, which is adjacent to the pool. And so there's other types that work well and have very tropical look for pots and stuff. And so I want to have those there in kind of a wall of greenery, kind of a jungle room effect.
Nice.
And the far end where the mermaid is, that's going to be Mermaid Cove. And my ultimate goal is to get kind of a circular restaurant booth and have it back there. And I'll build a type of maybe bamboo, maybe some of those jade tiles, kind of a wall right there to have a separate divider.
That's awesome.
Yeah, let me tell the story about the booth that we found. Where my studio used to be, the building, back by the dumpsters, there was an old booth that somebody, that the restaurant inside had probably thrown out.
It was spectacular.
And so I grabbed my favorite model and I said, oh, let's do some shots around here. And so we did this whole little scene where she was, in her boudoir stuff, and they looked fabulous. And
it was this red tufted leather. It was rat-pack.
But the mistake I made was that I blogged it and I showed it on Facebook and Instagram, and I said, look what's by the dumpster, and then it was gone the next day.
I was going with the truck to get it, and it's gone.
You shouldn't have told everyone about it.
You should have posted that after you had brought it home.
I didn't even think about it. I'm just thinking, I was so excited. We got these really great shots of this booth by the dumpster, and then it was gone. So
because it was, the juxtaposition was great because it was this just really rich red leather tufted. It was total Rat Pack, swinging cool 60s. And in this kind of alley with rough brick and dumpster and trash.
Which is ideal for a photo shoot, yeah.
It was amazing, and it's not here because, it's not here. But yeah, and our plans know no bounds. Across over there, where we have plans to put up a pergola with a hot tub underneath. And, of course, the pergola, I'm going to carve tiki designs onto it. And then once that's up, have a little stone walk projection going out to kind of a fire pit and maybe a volcano. We'll see. It's in our imagination. Why stop at sanity?
You're only limited to what you want to do. And you have some huge plans. I'm excited for you guys. This is gonna come together really awesome. Yeah.
We have banana plants right over there that are covered right now. I have some. Pawpaw, young, like 3-year-old pawpaw trees, which people in the Deep South are familiar with them, but people elsewhere might not know. They are related to all these tropical fruit, the cherimoyas, sugar apples, everything that you find throughout the Caribbean. But it is a North American native, and they're very cold tolerant. And so during the summer, they have this very tropical look, and they have this very large custard textured fruit. In the winter they lose their leaves, and there you go. But it's very tropical. I'm going to get pretty soon some variegated ginger, because it's very cold tolerant, and plant in among here. I have some seedlings of dwarf sable palm, that are going to go, because they never develop a trunk. They just have the palm leaves that come up, and they're very cold tolerant, so they'll thrive here. Palmetto State Park, right down the road, that's all that's through there. If you've ever walked through there, it's like you're in deep Florida or maybe Central America, because it's just these palmettos everywhere. So I'm going to have all of that. That is our next big project for this coming year, is to landscape all of this and go beyond the bananas and the palm trees and get a lot more tropical foliage.
Any citrus plants? Are you going to start lime trees?
I've got a lime tree. Lime and lemon are very cold sensitive, so we can't put them in the ground. but we have them in pots. I have a big Ponderosa lemon that's big as a softball sitting right over there ready to be picked.
And yeah, nice. They're all right there by the garage so we can pull them in real quick when we're going to have another freeze.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Was it Monday night we're supposed to have a freeze of about 28 degrees, and so they're all going to go inside the garage. Right now they're under the shelter of the patio, which is fine for light freeze and everything, but once it gets down into the 20s, they're all going to kind of duck in there and get a little more warmth.
But then in the spring, we can pull them out and put them wherever we need to put them for the effect that we want. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Got to keep the bar stocked. So that's always smart to have those, have limes and lemons on hand and orange trees.
They get some big old limes that come off.
You got to get white grapefruit, too.
White grapefruit. That's, yeah.
That one. If you had a white grapefruit tree, you could sell those here. Because I haven't found them anywhere. We were talking about going to Whole Foods and Central Market to try and find them, because
I know Mike Hooker finds them in Austin on occasion.
Yeah. Well, and that's who gave me the idea. We were hanging out with him last night at the Hot Joy at the Pagan Idol Takeover.
Ah, okay.
So yeah, he was the one who gave us that idea. So
yeah, Mike's the first tiki aficionado that I ever met. We have during the summers we have dive-in movies. We have a really simple canvas drop cloth that we have rolled up right up there. We set up a projector across the pool and pick up themes. We picked six movies each summer, and we project it. And so this year we had, one of the movies we had was It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, which if you'll remember, there's a pretty famous sequence with Dick Shawn and what's her name? She was dated Fred Astaire for a long time. She's the bikini dancer. And they're in his bachelor pad, and there's these tiki idols around, and he's got tapa cloth over his bed and everything, and so it was a lot of fun.
And we had a cocktail to go with that one. The screwball went with that one.
Yeah.
And then we had Joe versus the Volcano.
Yeah, we had volcano bowls with the flames.
The flames. And then we had...
We did Jaws. It was our first one, and that was the most spectacular cocktail, probably. It was Blood in the Water. The cocktail isn't that great, but it presents well, because it's a blue cocktail, and it has grenadine in the bottom, which is red, and then you put a float of slow gin on top, which is red as well, so it kind of swirls together, and it looks like been a shark attack.
Awesome.
And then we had Splash, and we had Mermaid Water. With that.
I've got some suggestions for movies for this
next year.
We're
going to do a few movies. We're thinking of our list now. We're thinking Vacation's going to be one.
Probably Elvis Blue Hawaii. That was on our short list for last year.
And Caddyshack. We need summer movies, and we need drinks that are going to go with the movie theme. So
you got Psycho Beach Party, which is great.
Yeah.
You've got Horror at Party Beach, which I don't know if you've ever heard of. That's that one's really from the 60s with a band called the Del Airs playing really cool surf songs. They had one called the Zombie Stomp, so zombies for that movie, you know? Mm-hmm. Got to get something going. But yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's been pretty fun. So Mike and his wife came out to this, and he made daiquiris for everyone. Mike is like this master cocktail mixologist.
I keep telling Jamie, make me one of those like he made, and he hasn't matched it yet.
I try. I said, I'm using the same ingredients.
It's not the same.
And, of course, Mike won't tell you exactly how he made it.
Oh,
he's Mike.
It's like, I got the Stiggins pineapple. It's still not working.
Why does it taste different?
I got the Demerara. It's still not working. I mean, it's good, but it's not Mike Hooker good.
Well, I'm glad that the tiki community is embracing you, welcoming you guys with open arms. And we were just talking, you guys have gone to the Downtowner for their tiki events.
Yes, they had really, really, I was surprised at the quality of their cocktails.
The drinks were really good, yeah.
The drinks were really good. I have a problem with this kind of industrial modern, I think. It's a Spartan aesthetic.
There's
where
too
they
much
have
stainless steel in
lots
that place.
Lots of stainless steel, bare
concrete,
walls, hard concrete floors, and it just echoes and echoes and echoes. And, you know, I don't like that in a normal bar, but when I go for a tiki experience, I want the relaxing. And when I have to shout for my wife to be heard right next to me... You know, the waitress came to take our drink orders, and we were shouting, and we had to repeat it several times because it wasn't packed. There were a dozen or so. I mean, it was a good crowd, but it wasn't standing room only. Yet nobody could hear because everything was bouncing off the walls. When I went back to the restrooms, That's like, oh, wow, they're playing reggae. I had no idea there was even music playing.
So next time we'll try one of those booths in the back there that have...
Yeah, next time we go, we're going to go there. I mean, they have potential because they are obviously taking their cocktail seriously. But, you know, they could do some things with their decor, and it wouldn't even have to be expensive. Like I said, on a budget, that would really lend itself to the atmosphere and... just breaking up the sound. There are some really easy things you can do just to break up that echo chamber.
Yeah. We had gone for the first one with the Boozy Doodler, and we had a good time. The drinks were good, but what showed me they had potential is that they were using quality rums. They were using quality ingredients. Yeah. We talked to the bartenders for a while. They're talking about how they were making their own orgeat for this event. They were making pecan orgeat for their
the
drinks.
Pecan. That's one drink that I didn't get around to trying. They have, what, three or four originals on there that looked very interesting. But, of course, when you're going to a new bar that's doing tiki, you're going to be judgmental. And so you always order the Mai Tai and the various...
Yeah, that's my thing, is whenever we go to a tiki bar, I order the Mai Tai. And that's... It's wildly different at every place you go. And he's sitting here, oh, this is just orange juice and pineapple.
When we were in Seattle, we were going to try their real tiki bars, but we ran into a whole bunch of trouble.
Tacky Tiki Bar.
That's where we ended up, simply because we didn't want to battle the traffic. And Tacky Tiki Bar isn't, it's not on Critiki for good reason. It's a sports bar with tiki trappings. Yeah. And so we said, okay, this isn't going to work, but we will go ahead and order their Mai Tai. They came in hurricane glasses. It was rum and pineapple with... I don't know if it was Myers or Karuba, but with a dark float.
It was good. I enjoyed it.
It was good, but it wasn't way a Mai Tai.
The drink can be great.
And then the next day, I guess we went to Portland, and we had their Mai Tai, and it was a whole different experience. It tasted totally different, but it was so much more complex.
Oh, yeah. Hale Pele was our... We were getting into tiki, but we hadn't actually had the real tiki experience. I had gone to Dallas for a conference and said, okay, Palikia had just opened. And this was the first, this was in January, so Palikia had been open for like 2 months. And I saw some iffy reviews about it, but I went there. And they had put some effort into their decor, but I ordered a Mai Tai, and it was a mug, and it was like 90% crushed ice. And I was like, well, this is okay, but this is what everyone's all fired up about? I don't quite get it.
Yeah.
So then, you know, and we went to a number of other pseudo-tiki bars, and we were like, well, you know, we want to like it, but it's just not clicking, and we don't know if at this point we're throwing good money after bad. And so it's like, okay, here's this place, Hale Pele. It's supposed to be one of the top five tiki bars in the country. Let's go in and see. Mind blown. I had three dots and a dash.
When you finally have that real tiki experience, if your experience is to that point where the bar in Dallas and then this
tacky tiki.
The
first drink I ordered at Hale Pele was the Chief Lapu Lapu, because I am a huge passion fruit enthusiast. All the passion vines that I have growing here, I hope pretty soon to be growing my own passion fruit and juicing and everything like that. And so it's like, this is really good. Okay. And then, you know, we went on from there. She tried a Jungle Bird, and they make the Jungle Bird with the Blackstrap rum. It's like, well, this is very interesting. And I ordered three dots and a dash, and, you know, it has the rum agricole in there. And I was just fascinated by it. All these
multiple layers
of flavor. And I was just like staring at the glass. And Lindsay, our bartender, she was fantastic. And she saw, you know, that we were having like this psychotropic
trip. Yeah, and I brought my camera there, and I was photographing all these drinks. And then she started, every time she'd make a new drink that we didn't order, she'd put it in front of me and say, you wanted to get this? And I'm like, yes. And we had a little system by then. You put on your little light of the camera and lit it this way.
Yeah, I was holding it here, so getting the side lighting. And Lindsay
was getting these professional quality photos, you know, because she was helping us. And we knew by then, we were like, we photographed a whole lot of drinks that night. And we were like vlogging them.
A couple dozen drinks Lindsay made.
she was like really, you know, she saw what we were doing and she knew. And so it was that personal relationship helped a lot.
It's a revelation.
Yeah, it was. And then the next day we went to the Alibi, which that was an interesting experience. We
it
went
was gorgeous
during the day,
beautiful.
And it was like a time capsule.
Yes.
Except that in one section of this time capsule, they've ripped out all the original stuff and put in slot machines
yeah.
and such.
Karaoke equipment.
And it's like, okay. So. And they were playing. I cannot. When you go into the Alibi, and the Alibi is legendary, you can't see anything. It's like pitch black. You come in from the daylight, okay? It was what, like 4 o'clock that we went or something. Mm-hmm. And boom, it's black. They have no lights on. And gradually your eyes adjust and you realize, yes, they do have lights on. They're just very, very low. And it feels like it's perpetually midnight in the Alibi. And I cannot stress how spectacular the lighting is, the decor. They have murals on the wall. It's something from 1948.
You feel like you're in the 1950s, except for the fact that Guns N' Roses is playing over there.
They have Guns N' Roses. They have Tin Lizzy. You know,
what better way
fog
to
hat.
Take you out of a tiki experience.
It's
blasting like, Guns N' Roses.
I was like, they have the atmosphere. They have it going. They need to play, you know, what you hear now, the tiki music, and they need to go for that tiki crowd like Hellway Point.
They run it like a biker bar.
It's a biker bar.
And I understand as far as business goes that their karaoke nights are huge for them, and that's cool. But during the day, when you have, you know, half a dozen clientele coming in, you know, embrace the tiki. Mm-hmm. You know, embrace your heritage. Don't just run a biker bar that has tiki trappings, because, oh my gosh, that place is spectacular.
I mean, we could have, like, if
the
there
drinks
was a way
were
to,
okay.
If there was a way to walk out with some of those light fixtures, we would have done it. But, the, you know, the velvet paintings and
beautiful.
All the stuff on
I mean,
the walls were just, and it was. It was like a time capsule. And it's like nothing has changed since 1958 when they built it or whenever. When it was
1947.
So, nothing's changed. It looks just exactly like that. So.
Well, if you're looking for velvet paintings, I got somebody that you need to meet. But so what are other tiki experiences have you had, or is it just, or have you been to other like actual tiki bars?
No, not really. I mean, I did a couple of things at Texas Tiki Week this past, but like I said, you know, I've only been aware of tiki for less than 2 years.
Yeah, we just started, and then we went on that Northwest road trip.
Yeah.
And we were able to discover a few places along that way. One thing we did also was stop in a lot of antique stores, because the antique store here has, you know, it's country and colonial
frontier
type stuff. Whereas
West.
Up there, there's a lot of little tiki finds that, you know, from people closing out their tiki bars or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so the problem that we had was that we can't get this on an airplane to get it home. And what are the shipping options we have of this? And there weren't very many, you know, as far as that goes. So we weren't really able to take advantage of
it. We were in Coos Bay, Coos Bay, Oregon, logging capital of the Pacific Northwest, and I found like 15-inch Japanese glass floats for like $20.
Nice.
And I'm like, ah!
And we
had no way to get them home.
I mean,
no way.
You risk breaking them when you
ship them.
Like
yeah, everything.
And so
it's like there's just no
reason.
Like, well, maybe I could rent a car and I could drive and y'all just fly back or something. I mean, it was just
the levels of desperation that
you know,
reach
like
to take them home with you.
$150 around here if you go to Corpus or Galveston or something. And it's like, and they're like a dime a dozen there or something. I don't know. It's just. Oh my gosh!
There's this one spot in Vegas. It's in this antique strip mall. It's called Tiki Lee's, and he has like barrels full of floats.
Oh my gosh!
So I mean, it if you're looking to drive, it's only 18 hours each way. I mean,
so
I'm not saying
gas,
yeah.
You know, see
I'm not trying to influence anybody here, but if you need a partner for a road trip, let me know. But yeah, so that experience that you're talking about with Alibi, that sounds like when you walk into Frankie's, like when we fly in and get in land at 9 in the morning and go have breakfast and then go straight to Frankie's, when it's this bright outside and all the vampires inside are shielding their eyes, and then you close the door and you're like, okay, the lights slowly come up because they're so dim, and it's that's the best feeling in the world.
Here we go. I do a lot of interviewing, so I'm going to turn the tables on you.
Okay.
How did you get into tiki?
Honestly, I don't really know. It seems like it just came along out of nowhere. So when I was like 17, 18, just out of high school, I got really into rockabilly. I got really into Brian Setzer, got really into the Stray Cats, got really into Reverend Horton Heat once I found out they were from Texas. You know, it was just sort of that thing. And then listening to the older music that was inspiring them, some of the songs that Brian Setzer covered with the orchestra, listening to surf music, starting the surf band, playing in the Phantomatics for almost a decade now. It just seemed like a natural progression. And I remember my first Tiki mug experience was Tiki Farm had done a run of mugs for Fender guitars. The, Rigor Morty? It was a band that they had put together of mugs. One mug has a guy playing bongo. One of them was a guy with the Stratocaster. One was a guy with the Telecaster. And one was a guy with a bass. So a buddy of my bass player from the band, he got them for me as a gift. He's like, hey, I got these for you. I know you were really into them. So that was my first experience of having mugs. And then just from there, and that was probably 2008, 2009. And I've always had a fascination with it, but it wasn't until we had gone to Frankie's in 2014 that it was the same thing. I had known about tiki. I had tried making tiki drinks at home, but it wasn't until we went to Frankie's that we actually got the tiki bar experience. And from there, it's been a downward slope.
Cool. downward slope. So what was the impetus for this podcast? I've listened to all your episodes, and I've never heard you go into the origins of this mad enterprise. And this is the first the first episode of 2018.
Yes,
so,
it is the
so
first.
Why don't you give us the secret origin of Marooned in Texas Tiki podcast?
Well, because when people think of tiki, they think of California. They think of, you know, everywhere except Texas. Like we were talking about earlier, Texas does have a really good history of tiki. Les Baxter is from Texas originally.
Yes.
So, I mean, Texas has its roots in tiki.
Beach is from Texas.
Yes, exactly. Raymond, yeah, he was from Texas. So, I feel like its roots originate here, but when people think of tiki, they think of, you know, they think of Frankie's in Vegas. They think of all the bars in... They think of Don the Beachcomber, Trader Vic's in California. But there's a lot of really cool stuff happening in Texas. Lalo opened up. You got Howie's in spring. Then really what kind of cemented it for me is I'm on Instagram. I see all these tiki artists, all these people doing these really cool things. And I was looking for a new artist to do some artwork for my band. And I found the Boozy Doodler. I was like, this guy has a really cool style. And I started looking at his stuff and found, I'm like, New Braunfels, like, this dude's in my backyard? Like, how is this guy in my backyard and I've never heard of, or I've never known about him until now? So I reached out to him. He did artwork for us. We met at some events. We hung out. We go over to the Boozy Lay. And I'm like, he is well known within the tiki community, but why is he not more well known? Why is there no focus on Texas? Why are we left out? Why are we marooned here in landlocked San Antonio and New Braunfels? And Houston's by the water, but yeah. you know what I'm saying. It's just, I wanted to bring a focus to Texas. I wanted to expose and show what's going on. And you're doing great things with your bar. I want to show that too. Get the word out. I'm not saying you have to invite every Texas Tiki file, every Tiki Central poster over, but, you know, you're doing really cool stuff. And
we should have a party when it's more complete.
Yeah.
Have a little bit more.
We'll have a grand opening, I guess, whatever. Yeah, it's interesting. I was... When I heard your episode with the Boozy Doodler, I was like, New Braunfels? I had no idea New Braunfels was such an epicenter of Texas tiki going on.
Exactly. Nobody.
We've got to have, you know, this alliance between the Boozy Lay and the Lagoon of Mystery for world tiki domination or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Who knew
that New Braunfels was the center of home tiki bars in Texas?
But you know, there's a lot of stealth tiki around because back in the summer. There was an estate sale in Lockhart, of all places, you know. And it turns out that it was a mystery writer who had not passed away.
But in some of the same circles.
We ran in some of the same circles, yeah. But I had never met her. I knew some other writers who knew her, and nobody really knew that she was into tiki and her husband was into tiki. And she had come into a bunch of money, and they'd moved to the south of France. And so they were selling their home in Lockhart, and They had a tiki bar.
That's a hell of a move, Lockhart, Texas to France.
He came home with all kind of junk. Okay? And I say junk now, but it needed to be cleaned up.
And it was less junk than I would have because Mike Hooker got there the day before me and cleaned out their really good stuff, their Orchids of Hawaii lights from the ceiling and everything like that. But, yeah, it was. I was like, who is this person? Because I found she had gone to the World Science Fiction Convention in 1997 in San Antonio, and I was there the whole time. And it's like, this person's like shadowing me in all these different places. Been to Armadillo Con in Austin because I do science fiction writing.
They had little Trekkie costumes there too.
Yeah, they had his and hers Star Trek outfits, uniforms, and it's like how
which series though? Original.
Original. It's original. Okay. Right. Yeah. And so I'm like, okay, how can you go to France and leave this behind? I don't know. I don't get it.
There's no trekkers out.
She collected like the entire. Everything that had been produced, pop culture item from Babylon 5, all the action figures, this board game, all this other stuff. And it's like, you collect all this stuff and then you leave it. And it was like in the back corner of the tiki bar, you know. And I mean, there was some really cool stuff there. And I came away with a carved monkey pod punch bowl set and some just different things. I have a big... Kauai Coffee Company big coffee bag that eventually I'm going to mount up on the wall once I figure out a way to weatherproof it sufficiently. Yeah. And so, you know, it was like, these are the estate sales that I see people in California in the Midwest posting about all the time. I finally have had one. Yay. This is cool.
I've gotten to experience it. Yeah. I mean, and that's why I say the tiki community it's still small, but it just gets even smaller when you realize, you know this person? Yeah. I didn't know you knew that. Like, when we were doing the episode with Mike, I had conversed with Jim Hayward out in Florida. He runs the Atomic Grog. Mm-hmm. He does all the Maikai tribute recipes. I had talked to him a few times, been making his recipes at home, and then find out Mike Hooker is originally from Fort Lauderdale. Mike Hooker used to promote shows back in the day with Jim Hayward. Like, it's such a small world.
It's, I think, Tiki community is going to start playing a game 6 degrees of separation from Mike Hooker.
But yeah, it's a super small community, and that's why I say that's one of the reasons I love Texas for Tiki is because it's so small, but everybody does seem to know each other. Everybody gets along great. We all have fun. We all want the same thing. We all just want to drink.
But you know, small is relative because Texas has a population of close to 20 million.
Oh, I'm
so
not saying.
So if you take all the tiki files and Texans and put them in Rhode Island, you know, we would be a major percentage of that country, that state, you know, the population. Here we go. But you know, just because Texas is so big, it seems like we're a lot more dilute. But you know, there's a lot of tiki enthusiasts
between
here,
San Antonio and Austin. You know, I'm gonna say that's the tiki 35 between San Antonio and Austin. That's a tiki highway.
Yeah,
I'll call it right now.
The next time I'm in Houston, I definitely want to hit Lalo, and I'm just
you need to
kicking myself because I had relatives that lived in Spring for decades until the past couple of years, and Howie's is right where they were, and so they move away from Spring, and now Howie's open. So it's like, oh, it was so close.
And a free place to stay.
Yeah, exactly. Just catch an Uber to where you're staying, and
definitely.
But yes, Lalo is a blast. You need to get out there.
We're trying to make organize a trip to New Orleans. We had planned to go around the New Year. But the weather got bad and then got worse and worse, and so we had to cancel the trip.
They had a hard freeze there New Year's Day, that's when we were going to be there, and we just said, well, let's do it for spring.
Latitude, so. I mean, they had travel advisories and everything. It's like, there's no way we can push through this. So there's Latitude 29 and Tiki Tolteca are both on our must-do lists. There's a body paint artist out there who's insanely talented named Craig Tracy, and I want to go out there because he's got this one painting. And he uses nude models and does this body paint. And it's similar to Joanne Gare, but he's got his own style. And it's kind of the trompe d'oeil, you know, fool the eye. And he's got this one where this model is posed and is painted as a bird of paradise flower. And it is spectacular. And I have got to have a print of that for my tiki bar because it would go perfectly. And I've been a fan of his for a long time.
So just to clarify, I thought you were going to say you were going because you wanted to be a nude model.
I don't think
have
you
your body painted.
I don't think there's enough.
I thought that's where this was going. I'm sorry.
I don't think there's enough money in the world to get him to paint me as a nude model. But
I'd buy one.
Yeah. No, you wouldn't. You would mock me mercilessly.
Well, she's like, I'd wait till they were on clearance,
then
and then I'd get
one.
Then
I'd put it on Facebook and Instagram. Yeah.
Well, she's the photographer, so she's got the experience with the pinup and the boudoir. So she's, she's really been encouraging me to get this finished so she can start doing pinup shoots in the Laguna Mystery using the bar as a backdrop and the pool and all that other fun stuff.
Yeah, that's gonna be a blast. That sounds like a good time. So, what other travel do you guys have planned, or what other tiki bars are in your horizon?
Gosh, that's a tough one. We want to do the Maikai. You know, we would love to do Hukalau because, there's Tiki Con and there's Tiki Oasis.
Tiki Caliente.
I mean, all the ones on the West Coast seem to be really kind of intense. Hukalau seems to be more open-ended that, they don't sell out in 5 minutes when they go on sale. It's not as urgent or competition.
Tiki events.
Yes.
Bamboo on the Bayou.
I wanted to go this past year, but then there was this hurricane thing happened that
it got postponed. It's happening in March.
Well, we're gonna have to mark a calendar. I hadn't realized. I thought it was gonna go ahead and go. Okay.
No, because I was supposed to do an episode out there. My band was supposed to play.
Okay.
It got postponed.
Okay.
So it's happening in March now. So it didn't happen originally. So with the hurricane and everything, I guess the permit, because where they were going to have it, they were going to be blocking off a city street.
Right, right.
So with all the permitting and everything, the hurricane, the World Series, that got pushed aside. So their permitting didn't come through in time, so they couldn't do it.
I heard conflicting information, and I thought they went ahead and had it. And
they had the crawl. The week-long crawl happened.
Okay.
But the event itself has not happened. So
okay. Well,
it's happening. I'll let you know what the dates are.
Therein lies the confusion. Yeah, Bamboo Bayou would be a lot of fun.
And you can go to Lalo. Go have a blast, because Lalo's the best time ever. And
I really want to go to Lalo. I've heard nothing but good things about it.
It's terrific. That's the reason we drive to Houston at least once a month to go out there, because it's such a good time. They take good care of us. They make great drinks.
Nice.
So, yeah, you guys got to do that. But sorry. So you wanted to do Hukilau. So from what Mike has told me, his experience with Hukilau and Maikai is, if you're going to go at least a few days before Maikai, because once it's Hukilau, you can't really experience Maikai.
Yeah, yeah. I was online. I think it was even last night that I was on the Atomic Grog and was going through the virtual 3D, experience of the Hukilau, and I got lost several times. So that's pretty sad when you're on your computer clicking through and then, so where am I? I can't find my way out, So I definitely want to see the Maikai. I mean, because that's, like the alibi, that's a piece of history that's, been gloriously preserved. Talking with some people online about the Kahiki, and it's like, they had something that was even more spectacular up in Ohio, and nobody cared enough to save it.
Yeah.
And that's really sad, because I've experienced that. I'm a writer, and I did a book that consumed way too much of my life about the chicken ranch, the infamous LaGrange Chicken Ranch that they based the Best Little Whorehouse in Texas over.
Okay.
And at the time it was closed, nobody really cared. It was just kind of a punchline of a joke.
Yeah.
And right now it's ruins, and nobody made any kind of effort to save it or preserve it or anything like that. Part of it, the parlor section was chopped off and moved up to Dallas and turned into a bar that failed after 3 months, and then they bulldozed it. That's a lot of history that was lost. And so I see this that everyone kind of looks back on and say, oh, wow, that's
like,
really
look
interesting.
At what we had.
But it's gone.
Yeah.
It's gone, and you can't get it back. And so when I see things like that that are nationally known or even world famous, that nobody really cares enough to do anything to preserve, that's depressing, and I don't want to see that anymore. I want people to appreciate what they have and not turn around, 10 years after
turn it
it's
into
gone.
A karaoke bar.
Yeah, karaoke bar. You know, and say, you know, oh, it was great when I went. I wish it was still around. You know, put the effort in to save it and preserve it and keep it going. You know, people in Houston go to Lalo and go to Howie's and make sure that they stay here. So 20 years from now, you don't have to say, man, that was really great when they used to be here.
Yeah, no, you remember those great times we had.
Let's go now. You know, 20 years from now.
Yeah. No, and that's part of, I guess it's just the culture change, because that's what happened. You had it huge in the 30s, 40s. It went through the 50s and 60s. Once the 70s hit, it just, cultures changed. People didn't care anymore. And that's why all the classics are gone. That's why you only have the Mai Kai now. You have, I mean, what really else is there?
Well, there's a few like Tiki T and some of the old timers out in Los Angeles and in the West Coast. But, you know, it's our generation. Well, you're a little younger than me, but, you know, we look back and, you know, we grew up in the 70s and 80s when the tiki was, you know, looked down upon. And so we didn't have any idea that it was something. You know, the closest we got was, you know, Gilligan's Island reruns and Fantasy Island. So now that we're adults and we're looking around and saying, wow, that was really cool. How dare y'all take that away from us and not give us that opportunity? And so that's why, you know, things like Hale Pele and you know, Lalo and that stuff, you know, we really appreciate that because that's a lot of fun. It's really enjoyable, and we appreciate the intent and the artistry and the effort that's put into the presentation. You know, it's, you know, you're not going there. That's going back to the downtowner,
mm-hmm.
our experience there. So we're drinking, enjoying the drinks, which are fairly well-crafted craft cocktails. But across from us on this other table, there are some 20-somethings, and they have some of these elaborate craft cocktails, and they're standing there with their cell phones out, filming each other, seeing how fast they can down them, you know, like you know, a 12-ounce drink, and they're treating it like shots and posting it to Instagram and Facebook. And we're looking at each other, and it's like, you're missing the point entirely.
Yeah, like, did you even taste that?
Yes. No, you savor
that's
these
the thing,
things.
I never do shots because I'm not in it to get drunk. I'm in it to sip and enjoy and, you know, appreciate.
It's the experience.
Exactly. But, and I think, like we were saying, it has a lot in part to do with the people who probably would have been around this age in the 70s. That was their parents' thing.
Yeah,
that was something that they did. That's not what they're gonna do. I mean, I don't think any generation's ever been like, I'm gonna do exactly what my parents did.
we can see that in our teenagers. So, yes.
Yeah. So I mean, it, and that's why now that we're in what, the third wave of tiki, we got to keep it going. We got to make sure these places live on. Now, there's certain places that I don't think are ever gonna go away. I don't think Frankie's in Vegas is ever gonna go. Tiki T's never gonna go away. So, I mean, at least we'll hopefully always have those. But Tiki T is a blast. That place is not even a closet. It's a shoebox. it's tiny. Honestly, the entire bar is probably this pillar to that wall, this whole section. That's it. Like, it really is. But it's a blast and really good drinks.
Yeah. What was that tiki-themed vegan place that we went to?
That was No Bones Beach Club. It was terrible, terrible drinks. They were awful, awful drinks. They have one in Portland, and they have one in Seattle. Terrible drinks, but their food is fantastic.
Really good vegan food.
Oh, my gosh. I had shredded jackfruit flautas, and it was spectacular. They used green jackfruit, which has no sweetness yet. It's just starchy. But when it's cooked, it shreds, very much like pulled pork. And it was spectacular.
And the food was amazing. Their drinks were
pretty bad.
I did a Mai Tai, and it was quite boring. Yeah, their decor was really nice, except for the vulgar
beachy
rap music that we had to ask them to turn off because we had small children with us.
Yeah,
right?
it was. And that's another thing, goes back to the atmosphere. A lot of the people work, they just don't, you know, if the wait staff is just in charge of the, you know, radio settings.
We're looking around and we're like, this doesn't go.
It doesn't fit at all.
One of these things is not like the other one.
You know, it doesn't
matter. Something with less F words.
It's not, you know, not a, knock against rap or anything. I mean, if they were playing U2 or Aerosmith, that wouldn't work either. You know, well, Led Zeppelin doesn't have a place here.
UB40 would have been fine.
Yeah, that's. We went to a UB40 concert 2 years ago in San Antonio at the Majestic, and I swear I have never seen so many middle-aged white women losing their shit.
I was one of them.
Yeah. It was. I was like,
how
oh
many times did they play Red, Red Wine? They're gonna start the show with it. They're gonna end the show with it.
They ended the show with it.
That was the encore.
That was the encore. Red, Red Wine.
Because everybody's like, they didn't play Red, Red Wine. What the hell?
Yeah, you know, they did. You know, did they do? I Got You, Babe.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, they did that. Okay, they didn't have Chrissy Hynde with them, but still, you know, I mean, they did their what they have. They have like 8 or 10 hits or something like that. They did those. They did some deep cuts, and then they finished with Red, Red Wine and. And, you know, hey, there you go.
Tops were flying, right?
Yeah.
Over UB40. I just want that to be... Tops were taken off for UB40. That is awesome. Wait, you're going to take your top off for UB40 now?
There you go. Hey.
To each their...
I rest my case.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it looks, so UB40's up there, and it looks like the cast from the Full Monty, you know, like 20 years later, you know. It's like, oh boy, okay, here we go.
He could use a treadmill.
Like, all right, I guess this is what we're gonna have to settle for. So yeah, what's the blog? Where can people find out other than Tiki Central? I'm gonna post the links for all of the podcast. But where can people find out more about the Lagoon of Mystery?
My blog, which is pretty eclectic, but that's JLB Gibberish. My name is Jamie Lynn Bloschke, which is not very common, and it's not female, although most people mistake me for a woman when they just read my name. So yeah, I'm all over the internet, so Bloschke is Blaschke, which is a really common name, I can assure you. I'm pretty easy to find online. So
awesome.
Lisa on Location, my wife, her website's Lisa on Location, and then her specific boudoir and the pinup work she does under Secrets by Miss Lisa.
Okay.
So people can find galleries and see the really cool stuff that she does there.
Yeah, if they're looking for to do a boudoir or pinup photo shoot,
or underwater. She's got some spectacular, y'all haven't gone to the bathroom right there, but she's got some of her underwater work over there, mermaids and other such stuff. She's incredibly talented.
Not until summer, though, for the underwater, because we don't have a heated pool.
Yeah, we got to wait until
it's
at least April.
It's kind of cold right now.
Well, that's awesome. So, I mean, what's next, or what's the next step for the Lagoon of Mystery?
Well, I need to put a second coat of paint on all the silhouettes of the sea creatures under the ceiling, and then the next thing I'm going to work on the bar and put in the wet bar. I've got a big concrete seashell, clamshell.
Nice.
Because you can't get real ones anymore unless you're willing to pay thousands of dollars, and again, on a budget.
Yeah.
That's going to be a sink, so I'll be able to rinse and wash and everything right there. Then after that, apart from the landscaping around the pool, I'm going to tackle the cladding, the carved wood cladding for these white stucco posts, and so it's going to be all... Maori and Hawaiian and Polynesian tikis and designs and stuff and carved into wood, and that's going to be all the way down. And
awesome.
So that's a big project. Yeah, that's going to take up pretty much most of my summer if any of these other carving projects are something to go by.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it, and everybody can keep up with you, like I said, through the blog, through Tiki Central. I think these drinks are getting a little low.
Okay.
Are we so ready for another round?
Okay. Well, that's a Port-au-Prince there. We can do those again, or I can make, you know, we can do a hurricane. That's always a favorite around here. I do it a little bit differently, not dramatically.
I kind of like the mermaid water.
You like the mermaid water. I don't know.
I don't know what that is, so let's go with that.
We can go. Okay, we can do some mermaid water. Okay. Got some spiced rum and some blue curacao and some other stuff like that, so we will tackle the mermaid water next.
Yeah, and I hear the natives getting restless, so we'll go ahead and wind this down. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Marooned. If you guys want to stay up to date, join the Facebook group now. We're going to be retiring the page. I've started a group. That way we can get more interaction with everybody and get the Texas Tiki Files, Texas Tiki community talking. So look that up. That'll be on Facebook. You can find us still for the time being at facebook.com.
Yeah, they're changing. I read that Facebook is changing the algorithm, so now you have to be in a group if you want to see anything, because if it's just a page, it's not going to show up in your feed.
All right, so there we go. Yeah. So for the meantime, the Facebook page will link you to the group, facebook.com/maroonedpodcast. You can find me on Instagram at David Fantomatic. You guys have Instagrams or...
Yes. I have an Instagram, Lisa on location. Yes.
And I've got an Instagram account, but I don't post anything on it. I just use it to look at other people's cool pictures.
Maybe you should have a Laguna Mystery.
That's probably something that I will add in the near future.
All right. So, yeah, thank you again for having us over for the awesome drinks. Gonna find out what this mermaid water is all about. And until next time, Akole Maluna, y'all.